All right, everybody, welcome to BO Boys for Tuesday, April 9th. Fuck it, it's a Raw feed. We're doing it live. I'm Clayton.
Yeah, I'm Pat. Clayton, it ain't just two tonight. Tonight, three is a crowd because we have got a special guest for this big weekend recap episode. Here he is. Wanna BO senior intern Christopher has returned to the BO Boys. Welcome, Christopher. Welcome back.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. All that matters is the boys are back. The boys are back. That's all that matters.
The boys are back in town. Three different towns. Two different states, two different boroughs, a college campus. We're all over the place, but we're together here on the podcast. So before we get into this weekend, how is the schooling going, Christopher? You're here, of course, because a class was canceled. So you could stay up extra late and pod with your supervisors.
I was going to say bosses. We're his bosses.
With your bosses. Mm-hmm. How is the schooling going? And what are some of the box office movie things that you've been noticing on campus recently? What is the talk of the town as you guys head into end of year, party time?
Sydney Sweeney is definitely a big star. I had a few people that were interested in Immaculate just because she was the star. So I definitely think she's a pretty big star. No one cares about Ghostbusters. That's not a thing. I don't think anyone cares about Ghostbusters, but people do care about the collab. People, the collab, bring on the X for all these new upcoming movies because people are loving the collab. So those are like top three new things.
What did you think, on a recent episode, Clayton and I talked about how it should be Deadpool x Wolverine over the summer. Do you think that would boost that movie on the college campuses if they did the X instead of the and?
100%, and you were so right. Reclaim the X. It's literally, he's the X-Man. He's the main X-Man. So why not just make it Deadpool, the X-Men logo, Wolverine?
Yes.
It's so easy. It's right there.
Yeah. So, Kong, Godzilla, this collab, have you seen that in the campus parties? Are guys and girls and people on these, are the co-eds doing, are they chugging? Are they doing keg stands? And, when someone gets a lot of beer in them, do you hear people say that's Kong, that's Godzilla? Is that sort of becoming lingo at these college parties?
People are definitely interested, but one of the strangest marketing tactics that I've ever seen, I volunteered at a blood drive and all donors and volunteers got a free Godzilla X Kong crossover with American Red Cross t-shirt. And that was the Tuesday, I think, before the movie came out.
Wow. The American Red Cross is collabing with the collab.
Yes.
That is incredible.
I know. I thought it was great.
It is. I mean, someone's going to live because they got a blood transfusion from someone who only did it to get a Kong X Godzilla collab t-shirt.
Yep.
It's a weird tie-in when you think about it, because when these monsters, and they are monsters, let's remember.
Oh, they're monstrous, yeah. For sure.
Battle each other. They do a lot of damage, and they do kill people and injure people in major cities. And the Red Cross is there to try to save people, give blood to these people. So it is reminding people, I guess, of the human loss involved in these movies in a way that I don't think they want to, because these movies are not supposed to be about that. They're supposed to be about big monsters punching each other, and you don't think about the collateral damage. So it is a weird collab, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But, it's these movies are a good reminder that we always need available, new, fresh vats of human blood, because who knows what's going to happen? We had an earthquake in New York last week. You could have a Godzilla Kong real life situation for all we know. So
yeah,
get those vats of blood out there. Give blood, get t-shirts. I love it. I love it. And that person's going to leave the blood transfusion or leave the blood donation. And then they're a walking billboard, which is all a movie theater, movie company ever wants. So Clayton, I think it's time we get into this plow. for the weekend of Friday, April 5th. So can you, on mic, with the team, give us a plow for this weekend?
Speaking of the collab, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, $31.2 million, down 61%, at 87 theaters. It's at $134.5 million in its second weekend at number one. Number two, Monkey Man made $10.1 million in its first frame. Number three, and this is a shocker, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire made $9 million, down 42%, minus 510 theaters. It's at $88.8 million in its third frame. Number four, another newbie, The First Omen, made $8.3 million in its first weekend. And number five, Kung Fu Panda made $7.7 million, down 25%. It lost 184 theaters. It's at $165.9 million in its fifth frame. And that is your top five.
So, you know, how about we start with, I mean, do we want to start with a collab? Let's get the holdovers out of the way before we get to the newbies, I guess. I got to say the collab ended up doing better than it looked like it was going to do on Friday. Because on Friday, we were getting reports of 70%+ drop from Friday to Friday. And as we saw this weekend, it only did a 61% drop. It made us $31 million. So Kong and Godzilla, they were a little on the ropes on the first day on Friday, but they really came through on Saturday and Sunday. You know, why do you guys think that is? Is it just that, you know, here's what I think it could be. And you tell me, the kids are really excited about Kong and Godzilla. And I think, you know, not just the college kids who are chugging beer, but the younger kids who are chugging milk and who are chugging Prime. I think this, you know, I've heard it from several, especially wannabe moms that I talk to. Their young kids, their young sons are very excited about Kong and Godzilla. And
just
I think that's what we saw Saturday and Sunday.
Just well, sons?
I'm talking to very specific wannabe moms that I have spoken to who have wannabe sons. I'm sure there's wannabe daughters, wannabe children.
Children.
I'm giving some anecdotal boots on the ground reporting of wannabe moms who've reached out to me directly via text message, via other forms of communication. That the kids are interested in these monsters.
What you're saying, Pat, and this is what I, you know, this is how I'm deciphering this, is that
you're so
Italian that you only befriend moms that have male sons, like that you have kids that are male. That is how Italian you are.
Yeah,
you will not be friends with anybody who has a female daughter.
No, but I mean, I think, you know, we look for someone who has an heir, and specifically I talked to a Italian wannabe mom who has a son, and this son was very excited for Kong, and I think we're seeing that. I mean, have you spoken, Christopher? You probably don't speak to a lot of wannabe moms, I'm guessing. And if you
do, not too many.
It's a big problem for them. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think definitely, I think the Godzilla minus one effect is still one of the big factors here. Cause actually, but I don't, the 70 plus percent drop could be part of that reason. Cause when I left the theater, an older man turned to his son as they were walking out of the theater and said, "Godzilla minus one, this was not." So maybe that's why Friday everyone was like, no, they didn't want to do it. But then Saturday, parents had nothing to do. Kids are kicking and screaming. We got to go do something. And they decide, let's go see the collab.
Christopher, I know you're excited, but try not to pound on the table. I know you're emphatically excited about this movie and these youngins going to the theater. But
how Kong would podcast, though. If Kong were podcasting, and someday he may have to have a podcast, he may have to, because you know you got to get the brand out there. He would pound on the table. So Christopher's only doing what he saw on screen.
There will be a Kong and Godzilla rewatch podcast where they rewatch all their movies and talk about it. That is happening. That is going to happen.
Yeah.
But I think here,
collabcast,
I think here the big thing that I think people were worried about that would have affected this is two factors. The Final Four being this weekend and WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I think the crossover with the fan base for these events and this movie was big. I mean, when you look at this Venn diagram. So the fact that this movie overperformed its first weekend and then only dropped 61%, I think is actually more amazing than people are giving credit for. Because a 70-something drop from that 80 opening would, I think, been okay, because that was so much more than we thought it was going to open at.
Right.
I mean, the highest people went 70. Austin, Wannabe Oh Boy Austin, went 70. Most people thought this thing could make 50, 55. It went to 80. So it dropping at that level with those two events, I think this thing doing 61 is really impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that this, and, you know, we talked about when open, people love these characters. When we had the ace on, Eric Weber, he kind of made it seem like he thought this was the peak. And the more I think about it, I don't think this is the peak. I think the next Godzilla X Kong collab movie is going to be an event that we all have to be ready for. We cannot underestimate that next movie. I think it would be a mistake if we do. I think these characters are rising right now. And I don't think they have finished their story. I think there is still a lot to come from these two, and people want more. And you know, I think this is, we're getting to the peak of these characters, but I don't think we're there yet. I don't think Pat, we're there yet.
Pat is famously a Kong crybaby.
You know what? I acknowledge them. I acknowledge Kong and I acknowledge Godzilla. So yeah, I love the second weekend here. And I think when we look at that April schedule, I think they've got, they're going to be stomping a lot of movies out these next couple of weeks. They have a lot of runway to keep racking up money.
Yeah. I mean, and we're going to get into it, next episode, but I have some thoughts on Civil War's prospects at the box office. I'll just say that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You'll just say that.
Yeah.
Looking at these holdovers, Christopher, you mentioned how no one cares about Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters made $9 million, dropped 42%. It's at $88 million. Where are we on this? I mean, this movie is probably going to get itself over $100 million. It's in such a weird place of, is this a successful franchise? You know, still. Is this movie going to earn another one? Like, what do you do with this franchise if it ends up where it's probably going to, making like $105 million domestic?
I think the way, you definitely have to cut the budget, because clearly it's like literally the exact same amount of people that are going each time. But I do disagree with Clayton that you leave the older people in. I say you do the younger people, because they're even cheaper. And honestly, from what I've seen, people do really like the newer stars, and most people end up complaining that all they try to do is nostalgia bait with the older stars. So I say kick out the older people and let the new young ones stay in, because that also attract, like, that gives a better option to attract a new audience. Because honestly, I like Finn Wolfhard more than Bill Murray. Like, I just feel like I have a more of a connection to him. So I say get rid of the oldies.
Wow. All right, Clayton, I think we're both thinking the same thing. How were you feeling when you heard Christopher, just to our faces, because we could see each other, you could see this on the YouTube channel, you could see how Clayton and I reacted to that rant, when Christopher looked at us and said, it's time to get rid of the oldies, let the new guard take over, because that's what the audience wants. I mean, Clayton, what did you think?
I mean, I would agree. Listen, I think with the Scream franchise, which, of course, you know, they fucked that up. But
yeah,
they were one of the only franchises to be able to do that. If I was sitting here being like, you can't have a Scream without Gale and you can't have one without Dewey, I mean, that's farcical. That's not true, because they were able to succeed without Nev. They were able to succeed after Dewey died in this last one, had the biggest box office domestically of any of them. I think that's a franchise that successfully was able to navigate into a next generation where people were like, oh, you know, I actually want to see Jenna Ortega and Melissa Barrera. I want to see them now. I'm okay if none of the old people come back. Ghostbusters is different. I think as much as you like Finn Wolfhard, a movie is not going to open with Finn Wolfhard. I don't care if it's an IP. I don't care if it's Ghostbusters. You couldn't even spit out his name.
It's hard.
I think if they make a Ghostbusters movie without any of the old people, no one's going to see it, because the thing about Ghostbusters is it is about those personalities and those people. That's all it had. It was based on those people's personalities. That's what they did. The only person who gave a shit about actual ghosts and stuff like that was Dan Aykroyd. He's the only person involved in that movie that gave a shit about the paranormal. They were all just like, well, let's just do this goofy movie that we can hang our jokes on. And I think that my take for going forward with this is not another movie, is what they're going to do is they're going to make it a TV show, and Ernie Hudson's going to be the star. It's going to be a streaming show starring Ernie Hudson and Annie Potts. And that's what you're going to get. And Dan Aykroyd. And that's what you're going to get from this. They're not going to do another theatrical movie. They're certainly not going to do it with the young cast, because they are not draws in any shape or form. Are you telling me, Christopher, that you were going to put down your hard earned money that you could spend on beer or weed, because it's legal, or vape other juice, various obviously. Narcotics, yeah. Vape juice. You're going to spend your hard earned money to see a Finn Wolfhard starring film? You would do that. You would say, my butt is in the seat because of Finn Wolfhard?
Well, but you got to cut these budgets, Clayton. If you're going to do a movie, let's forget Streamo series. Let's say they are doing another movie. But the only way to cut the budget is Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and Annie Potts.
Cutting then it's dead. Wolfhard then this is not dead.
Cut you, save you any money. Or don't show ghosts. I mean, I think the other thing is, do a Ghostbusters movie
where there's
no
implied.
Special effects, where it's mostly them taking the phone calls and talking about the aftermath of what happened that we didn't see on screen. I think you cut. If it's me, I'd cut the ghosts, and I would cut Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd. And it's the kids dating and talking about how they saw a ghost. I mean, to me, that's how you make this movie viable.
The Stranger Things star that is probably the most famous is the young lady Millie Bobby Brown. And she is in the Netflix ghetto. She cannot open a movie. She was actually in the least popular and least liked Godzilla movie of this whole franchise.
That is true.
So she didn't bring butts into the seats. They had to recover from the movie she was in. So I think that these people, these young people, she's not in this movie, obviously, but Finn Wolfhard is second to even her, and she could not open a movie. She will never open a theatrical movie because people can see her at home. And that's why I'm saying is like, I think you liking Finn Wolfhard is something that's big. He's more important to you than Bill Murray, and he should be, because Bill Murray hasn't been funny or interesting in, I don't know, 20 years, maybe. I mean, On the Rocks. He was good in On the Rocks, but that's a stream of movie at the theater, right? But this movie ain't going to you think they're going to open to $44 million with the next one if it's just Finn Wolfhard, the other young lady, and Paul Rudd? I mean,
the afterlife, wasn't the whole hook that it was basically this whole new family that was just like connected to Dan Aykroyd's character with, and then so like that was like audiences and showed up to that movie.
Yep.
Without expecting any of the OGs, and that worked. So I think they can 100% do it again.
Well, here's the thing. Where is?
Pardon me. They came to the movie.
Pardon you. Okay.
I didn't tell you to shut up.
I said pardon me. Yeah.
The reason they came to the movie, don't get it mixed up. They wanted to see the end where they got to see some of the old Ghostbusters. They went to see this movie with the understanding that the director said, I'm bringing this back for the fans, but I'm doing this for my dad. All that rhetoric, it was rhetoric. And it was like very strong rhetoric that these fans, it was a dog whistle. I'm going to say it. It was a fucking dog whistle that I'm going to bring all the oldsters back because I'm going to do this like Stranger Things knockoff movie. But you all know that the old heads are coming back. You know this, right? And that's why they went, because they were like, I'll sit through these little shits in order to get my old farts back. That's what those fans did. And they did it to make a statement about the past one, Answer the Call, that they didn't like. They were like, this director, we heard the dog whistle, roof, 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 bark, bark, bark. We're coming back. I mean, the whole thing's disgusting and despicable, but that's what happened.
Well, here's to close on this. Where is Paul Rudd fall into this? Because I do think there is a version of this next movie where Bill Murray, absolutely not in it. Dan Aykroyd, absolutely not in it. Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, absolutely not in it. And it is a Paul Rudd movie. Like, they still haven't.
That's a big paycheck.
Allowed.
That's a big paycheck.
That's a huge paycheck. So I mean, does Paul Rudd have to be?
No, you got to cut him if you're. Movies? Yeah, then it's just Finn Wolfhard, right. The little girl, podcast, of course, got to be
Paul,
in there.
What does Paul Rudd mean to people your age going to see something like this? You said you have no interest in Bill Murray. He's Ant-Man.
He's Ant-Man. Yeah. That's basically it.
Yeah.
Wow. No slap of the bass.
No. Yeah, just Ant-Man. Oh, yeah, that's basically all people would know him from.
Yeah, it's in that weird position. I mean, I'll call out our Wannabe O Junior intern, so your direct report, Christopher. Wannabe O Junior intern Jack, in his write-up on the BO Boys Substack, he compares this movie to Dungeons & Dragons in the sense that Frozen Empire, Dungeons & Dragons, they're going to end up finishing in that weird, you know, for a big budget movie, that $90 to $105 million domestic haul that puts it in a position of, is this really a franchise? And I don't think we've gotten a definitive answer on if Dungeons and Dragons is going to get another movie. I mean, I haven't heard anything about it going into production.
It feels dead at this point.
That you do feel like you would have known that they have a shooting date if they were ever going to make another one and keep Chris Pine attached to that. So that hasn't happened. So Frozen Empire, like Jack said, is kind of in that Dungeons and Dragons zone of it's just hard to justify spending another, you know, $90+ million on making one of these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So terms of holdovers, Immaculate made $1.3 million, dropped 57% in its third weekend. It's at $14 million. For a neon movie, still doing well. And here's why I bring that up. So let's talk about The First Omen. This movie came in number fourth in its first weekend, made $8.3 million. And I tease that there's something I want to pose to you guys that I heard on a podcast today. Mm-hmm. So I was listening to The Town with past and never again guest Matt Baloney.
Not future, Matt Baloney.
And him and whoever his podcast was. Lucas Shaw. Yes, yeah. That is the name. That is the name. We've said the name once. He's gotten that publicity. Good for him.
Yeah.
So they were talking about the winners and losers of Hollywood this year. And one of them said the loser of this year, and Bread of the New Flesh, you're about to throw something at the wall when I say this. They said the loser of the year was horror, and that horror movies may be on the wane. And they talked about how horror movies could be a genre that is in trouble, and did a whole several minute segment, and I suggest you just listen to our recap of it here, talking about the horror movies that haven't worked this year. There hasn't been a big horror hit. Is horror a genre that is gonna go the way of, I guess, cowboy movies? They were really, really bashing just the existence of horror movies at the box office. And you know, we look at it, First Omen did 8.3 million. Immaculate's at 14 million. We haven't had, you know, Night Swim did what it did. We haven't had a horror breakout. So all that said, is horror dead? is hard to get at the box office. Matt Maloney and Lucas Shaw correct?
I'm sorry, Lucas Slaw. Oh, it's Lucas Slaw.
Okay. Wow.
It's Baloney and Slaw.
Okay. So this guy's making sandwiches here, not podcasts, making sandwiches. Wow. Okay. Christopher, what do you think about this? Is horror dead at the box office because Night Swim didn't break out?
I feel like every movie you mentioned, though, still made money. So how can it be an unsuccessful genre if just because it's not pulling in huge numbers? I think they just need to adjust the barometer of what they consider a success, because I think even though Night Swim came and went, I'm pretty sure it still made money for Blumhouse, because their whole enterprise is built off making movies that come in for cost $10, make $30 million in the United States, like $10 million overseas, call it a day, and then just turn out the next one. So even though it's not pulling in massive grosses like Megan, all of these movies are still consistently making money for their respective studios.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
This whole conversation is ear bait. I mean, they're trying to get this to happen, like us to talk about it and conversate over it. And the fact that one of the biggest stories in the last couple of weeks was Late Night with the Devil, a movie that was going to go to Shudder in like 2 weeks, opened to, you know, for an IFC film. It was an IFC film, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. IFC film. Yes.
Opened really well. And that is a horror movie, because horror hounds, the gore heads will go. I wonder if they're going to have this same opinion when Terrifier 3 blows the fucking roof off of the hard tops this year.
Right.
Just because, and it's goddamn beginning of April. All right. They're just trying to find things to talk about. Maybe don't have your podcast every 3 or 4 days if you don't have anything to talk about. Maybe just sit it out if you're just going to make shit up and talk about bullshit. Because if horror was on the wane, we would say it was.
Yes. Because and we would have said it was before they realized that it was 100%.
Of course. Of course. So that's the thing here is that, I mean, the fact that we're talking about this is sort of annoying because it is ear bait. It's pod bait. And but I do refute it. I think we're going to have to, there's going to have to be several years where we have no horror hits for us to say horror's over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the early 90s sort of drought where you would occasionally have like a Candyman, which did okay, but the slashers were dead. And, you know, the Scream sort of movies hadn't come into vogue. That was when horror was dead. But like all things that are undead and unkillable, horror is one of those things. Yes. Even if there is a lull, it will not become something like Westerns.
Right.
It never will, because the idea of being afraid in a group, I don't think it's ever going to go away. I think there's just that feeling that you get, you take a date, teenagers love it. Young women love to go see horror movies. That's a huge demo for movies. And there's not a lot of stuff that is like really for young women. Mm-hmm. So when they go to horror movies, that's, you know, a part of the appeal. And so I think this is farcical. I think it was a farcical conversation.
Yeah. And I think with horror at the box office recently, there just hasn't been a great one. I mean, come on. They put out Chauncey the Bear was the hook for Imaginary. Mm-hmm. So it's not that people didn't go see Imaginary because they're sick of horror. They didn't go see Imaginary because the star of it was Chauncey the goddamn bear. And that's all that we just haven't gotten a Talk to Me type movie recently. We haven't gotten Megan. A Terrifier 2 or Megan. The movies just haven't been great. Mm-hmm. At the, you know, here's the thing is, name, if horror was dead in terms of the audience not caring, name the big horror movie that should have been a hit, should have been a bigger hit, and underperformed.
I guess The First Omen.
Okay. Let's talk about it. I mean, what do we think happened here? Because and I did think that just based on it being horror, that this movie would do in the high teens opening weekend. And it did not do that. It opened First weekend. So what did it do? 8 million. It opened to 8.3 million. So Christopher, talk on that, because you jumped in and thought that First Homan should have did better, and it did. Why is it at 8.3 million opening weekend instead of 15 million?
Two things. Well, one, I think Immaculate came out and people already got their fill of religious horror like 2 weeks ago, and clearly last weekend. So they didn't really, it was the same exact type of movie. And from what I can tell, it's basically both plots are just about how the Damien's born, or like the next devil's baby or whatever. So they're basically kind of almost the same not same movie, but same plot ish kind of. And then two, I think the First Omen, and clearly we have seen this, like it's not Halloween, and it's not even The Exorcist. Right. So then after this, I'm wondering how many more, like what's your guys' ranking? Like when they obviously do a Nightmare on Elm Street, like reboot, like what other of these 80s horror like icons are going to hit, and how many more, how many of these are going to miss? I think it's like almost starting to be like the Disney live action remakes where the first few were amazing. And then it's just diminishing returns as they go deeper and deeper into the barrel.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Freddy is Beauty and the Beast. You know, Freddy is, that's the one that is the champagne of horror brands. And, you know, they didn't do a great one with the Jackie Earl Haley reboot, but even that I think opened to like 40 million because it's Freddy, and Freddy is your, you know, that is the, that's Porsche, you know, that is the top of the line brand. So that'll be huge. I mean, the Omen's not even 80s though. The Omen is
70s.
Is 70s. So the Omen, you know, we talked about this. It's kind of always been bootleg Exorcist in terms of, you know, here's the thing, like Clayton, I'll throw this one out there. And I know they did a TV movie sequel and stuff. If they announced Rosemary's Baby remake, talking just in terms of you think you're waving it off, that means nothing. You don't,
it does nothing. Shit. It does nothing. It does fucking nothing.
Oh, wow. Christopher, as a college man, Rosemary's Baby, you hear that they're rebooting Rosemary's Baby. Does that mean anything to you differently than what the First Omen meant to you, or even what the Exorcist meant to you?
Yeah, it means a lot less than the Exorcist. And even, yeah, the Exorcist is definitely the top out of all of those three. Then the Omen I've just heard of, but I've never actually seen it. So I think for a lot of people, the Omen might be more of just, it's known by its reputation because the first movie was so good. So that everyone thinks that means there's interest in it, but that's not the case at all.
I'll throw this out there, just saying on the Rosemary's Baby as an IP. Rosemary's Baby, and in the Mia Farrow part, Sydney Sweeney.
Well, you just had that with Immaculate. There's no reason for that to even happen.
But it's the IP. Yeah, I guess, well, that's the thing. You know, and another thing that they talked about on this Podbait episode is when they were talking about how horror might be dead, they said, well, maybe the only thing that means anything is IP, in the sense that a Scream movie will do well, but like with, and they compared it to or animation, that you can't create a new hit franchise. The only thing people want to go see is the IP, which I think is a mind-blowing thing to say on the weekend, in which they failed with an attempted IP in the Omen. The thing that, and anyone would know this if they seriously followed box office and movies in a real way, the thing that horror fans want more than anything is something new.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are the most underappreciated fan base, because they will take a flyer on stuff that other fans of other genres won't.
Right.
They, like you said, novelty is a plus in horror as opposed to a minus. And in most genres, novelty is a minus.
Yeah.
So number one, Matt Baloney and Slaw, whatever, what is his name? Tony Slaw. What's his
Tony Slaw.
Name?
Yeah.
Tony Slaw. Respect the horror fans. All right? Because they're the intellectuals of the film going crowd when it comes to genre fare. okay? Because they want something new and interesting and stimulating, because horror depends on that. Horror depends on surprise. And right. so you need to be surprised. Right. And I think that there's going to be horror hits going forward, and they're going to have to eat their words. If they even remember that they said it, or they just move on to the next thing, because whatever they say doesn't matter. They're just spewing stuff to fill in time.
Right.
Which is something right. yeah. we don't do on this podcast.
We don't actually, do. We never spew. Yeah.
Don't spew. No spew. This spew. Is the no spew zone.
Yeah. Yeah. We do not spew. So I think with First Omen, the prequel nature of it, I think these studios have to stop making prequels. And especially for something like horror, where, like you said, Clayton, that the surprise is the thing. And there's nothing less surprising than a prequel, because we all know where it's leading. Mm-hmm. And they basically promised, here's a movie that will happen before the events that are interesting to you, which is Baby Damien.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
here is a movie in which we could guarantee Baby Damien is not in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you really think about it, why do a prequel to the thing that people know they're interested in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, Baby Damien is not, he's not Chucky. He's not Freddy. He's just not a character that anyone cares about. So if anything,
yeah,
the IP was, it turned out to be a negative, you know, when you look at the Immaculate or Late Night with the Devil that got so much less promotion and did so much better. It's horror fans want something new. And unless mm-hmm. the IP is Freddy or Jason, which obviously will draw, it doesn't mean that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just, yeah, this is one of those movies that, you know, we, in our last episode, you, Pat, you sort of talked me into taking it over mm-hmm. Monkey Man, because I was low on it. I sort of felt it was going to get at this point. But then after we talked, I was just like, you know, the horror does win. And but it's, I mean, $8 million ain't $4 million. You know, I mean, that's right. the other thing is, like, this thing didn't cry macho.
No, mm-hmm.
you
no.
know, and Night Swim didn't cry macho. Like, these movies make 8 to 11 to 12, 13 million. And listen, that's no great shakes. That's not great. I'm not saying that this is a great thing, but it's also not a complete catastrophe.
No.
The way some of these movies come out and just crater.
And also, we give a lot, and deservedly, a lot of guff to Chauncey the Bear, because he's a mm-hmm. he's a nothing, he's a nobody, he's never going to be let to Hollywood. Imaginary has made $27 million domestic at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
You yeah. know, that is what a horror flop is. A movie that probably cost $10 billion for Lionsgate and has made $27 million at the box office, sold a buttload of popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
How could horror be dead when a total loser like Chauncey the Bear
mm-hmm.
has gotten $27 million of tickets sold just because he's horror?
I
just don't see it. I just don't
now,
see it.
When, if Megan 2 comes out
right.
and Megan 2 opens to Chauncey numbers and does Chauncey numbers, then we know we're in trouble. And I will admit we're in trouble.
Yeah.
But we ain't in trouble. We ain't even close to in trouble. Trouble ain't even in town yet.
Yeah. 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 And yeah, I mean, something like Terrifier 3, you know, we'll get into that in October, but the sky is the limit on that movie. That movie is peaking the same way the collab is peaking. That is a movie that I think could open to $20 million. I mean, we'll see when we get there in October, but that horror is far from dead, even though people didn't care about this First Omen. Clayton, you mentioned Monkey Man, and we both ended up being pretty low on this movie in our weekend preview. We kind of got to the point where we weren't buying the hype. We thought this was a tweets not tick situation, and it made $10 million this weekend. So I think in the end, we were kind of right in the sense that the expectations got really high, and mm-hmm. we both pretty much nailed it. I mean, we said this was, I think I said 10, you said 9, you thought it would be
9.9.
Christopher, have you seen Monkey Man? what did the college awareness of Monkey Man end up being? Because, you know, I think we both agreed that awareness ended up being the problem, that it didn't have as much real life awareness as the internet thought it did. Were your fellow collegians excited for this, or did they have no idea what the hell Monkey Man was when it opened?
A few people told me that they were interested in it, but nothing like too crazy. I personally haven't seen it yet. I plan on going, actually doing a double feature of that and The First Omen sometime this week. But honestly, I think the bigger story will be next week, because everyone was kind of hoping this was going to be some John Wick-esque new franchise. Mm-hmm. And the first John Wick did only open to 14. So I think the real story with this one is going to be its legs rather than its opening weekend. Because honestly, $10 million, it cost $10 million to make. Right. So, I mean, it's going to be successful, but it's just about how successful is it going to be?
Right. No, that is a great call, because this movie, for what it was originally made for, if you would have told them the day production was completed that this would open to $10 million, that's a huge win. I think it's only a disappointment versus what the expectation had gotten itself to. And you're right, John Wick opening to $14 million with a giant star in Keanu Reeves versus Monkey Man opening to 10 with Dev Patel, who's been around for a long time. Everyone loves him, but he's never been a Keanu Reeves. It's good. It's just that I think we all have to learn to, again, taper our expectations when it's just based on, you know, just based on internet hype.
Yeah, I think the problem with that argument, Pat, is that John Wick, we didn't know John Wick was John Wick. And when somebody says this movie, Monkey Man, is John Wick, the John Wick fan should come out. So therefore, it should do better than the first John Wick, because John Wick was not a known thing, even though there was a known actor in it. At a valley in his career, we forget.
Right, right.
He was at a low point in his career. The Matrix bump and buzz had thoroughly dissipated. So the fact that this was being called John Wick, John Wick, John Wick, John Wick, and it only opens to 10, you know, again, the awareness of this wasn't here as much for the general public.
Right. So did the John Wick fans know that it was being called John Wick?
But that's
if you're not on,
like,
Twitter all day, do you know that this is supposed to be John Wick? I don't think there were Monkey Man commercials throughout, you know, the March Madness.
Yeah. So I agree with Christopher. Obviously, this is going to be, how well does this hold? You know, who's going to be interested in this next weekend? And when there's not WrestleMania, when the story has already been completed, so people are now satisfied that the story has been completed, now they can maybe go to the movies and see some other ass kicker, you know, take out some justice on some people's asses. Right. So I think that's going to play into it too. Next weekend, the people who are watching March Madness and WrestleMania are going to be like, where do I go for my ass kicking? And it could be Monkey Man. Very well could be, because it ain't going to be another movie.
Well, I mean, we'll talk about it, me and you, Clayton, on the weekend preview. But since Christopher is here, I want to get his take. So Monkey Man second weekend, it's going against the opening of A24 Civil War. This is A24 finally going for it with, like, I think this movie's budget at $90 million plus. Is anyone excited? Are young people excited for this Civil War? Is what they want to do go to the movies to see a nation divided on the big screen? Is that what college kids are excited about 2024?
No, I've not heard anyone talking about it, but I am personally just very interested in what this movie is going to be. And I know I'll definitely be going there, but obviously I go to everything. So I'm kind of an outlier in that. But yeah, I haven't heard any real talk about Civil War. But I also don't think my crowd is what they're aiming for at all, really. Even though this is A24 and that's like their usual like go-to demographic, I feel like this is trying to reach a more, I feel like the college campus kids are not exactly what they're trying to get with this.
I mean, I think God, I could go into this right now, but I don't want to because we
will
do.
We'll save it for Thursday. Yeah, yeah.
But I think without the college kid, the fact that college kids aren't interested in this is very bad for this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think older people are more entrenched in the two-sided coin that is politics. And I think younger people might have a chance to be more open-minded about what Alex Garland is trying to do. And if they have no interest, mm-hmm. oh my God, this movie is fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It's all I'll say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Monkey Man is going to have a chance to have some legs, we think. At least with the old people, but the young people, but the awareness has got to get out there. And mm-hmm. the $10 million opening is good, but it's not the kind of opening weekend number that is then going to generate a lot of publicity because of how good the number was.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. If Monkey Man opened to $16 million, then just that opening generates a lot of awareness for mm-hmm. those who haven't seen it. Whereas $10 million, you know, if you listen to the BO Boys, you know, of course, but it's not going to break into Entertainment Tonight. Than saying, hey, this Monkey Man movie opened huge. You know, it's not going to get the Entertainment Tonight bump. So anything else in this weekend's results that stands out to anyone?
I think we should get to that email because...
Okay, let's get to this
Christopher's
email.
Got a heart out and we need to talk about this email.
All right, so here's an email from wannabe oh boy, Zach. Sent an email. It said, hashtag not my tribal chief. B.O. Boys, since 2021, somebody's tribal chief of box office has been saying that Warner Brothers' strategy to release movies on HBO Max the same day as the theater did not impact the likes of Dune and Godzilla versus versus Kong's box office number. And he then, the wannabe boy Zach, puts up a tweet that says, and this is from Jeff Bach of Exhibit Relations Co. The tweet says, where we were, 2021 Godzilla versus Kong, $32 million debut, Dune, $41 million debut. Where we are, 2024, Godzilla X Kong, $80 million debut, Dune Part 2, $82 million debut. The power of theatrical and a healthy and frankly starved marketplace versus pandemic day and date. And then wannabe boy Zach says, as Jeff Bach state shows here, each sequel at least doubled the original movie's opening weekend. Something to think about. Okay, so basically what wannabe old boy Zach is saying is that our tribal chief, Scott Mendelson, who says day and date HBO, and we're all acknowledge him, doesn't matter. That's what Scott Mendelson has always said, that the day and date thing didn't matter. It barely took away any of the box office, but Jeff Bach of Exhibit Relations Co., he's saying, look at the facts. The Godzilla sequel, the Dune sequel, both did double the opening weekend of those day and date releases from 2021. So, guys, Not My Tribal Chief is possibly Scott Mendelson wrong about the HBO day and date strategy not really having taken the box office down at all for these movies.
Go for it, Christopher.
Go for it.
Well, I just feel there. He took the two example. Well, also one, has he ever heard of a breakout sequel? Like, if he's saying he follows Scott Mendelson, that's like he's literally just describing breakout sequels. So that's that's not anything special. And then two, if he looked at the data for literally any other movie other than possibly the Mortal Kombat movie, all of those, the movies that did really well at the box office did really good on streaming, and the movies that didn't do well at the box office didn't do well on streaming. So there was the same
in the Heights.
There was probably only a few million dollars difference for all those movies. And then, like I said, these are just breakout sequels because those movies were so good. And since they were already available on Max, everyone checked out those movies. And then when the second movies came around and you had to go see them in theaters, everyone was like, okay, we're going to go see them in theaters.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, here's the other thing that I think is being misconstrued in the data there. And Jeff Bach, Exhibit Relations Co., he wasn't sending that tweet out in retaliation to Scott Mendelson's theory. Yeah. That was not... This is not where there's not a feud between those two. They you know,
there's no heat. There's no heat there.
In the family, the BO, no heat. Scott Mendelson, the tribal chief, he has always been talking about what those movies in 2021 would have done in 2021 had the day and date, you know, the HBO Max version not been in play. He's not talking about what the sequels to those movies would have done 3 years later. You know, the context is Dune 1 opened in fall of 2021 when people were still not fully going back to the theaters because they had just gotten vaccinations or not gotten vaccinations, whatever. But the theaters had just opened in pandemic-y times. So what he always says is, if they didn't do the day and date release on HBO, it wouldn't have increased the theatrical at that time by more than a few million dollars. He never said that if they hadn't done day and date, it would have made as much money then as the sequel did 3 years later. So I think it's just a false argument to use the sequel 2024 box office as proof that the 2021 movies would have made more if they were theatrical only at that time.
Yeah. And can I add to the pile on here?
Yeah, let's pile on.
Because I
and we love WannaBO boy Zach. Thank you for writing in.
Yeah,
thank
love you, Zach.
We love you, man.
So here's the other thing, because I have to stick up for my tribal chief.
Yeah.
Is that these movies came out in different contexts as well. The movies that just came out now.
Right.
Godzilla versus Kong, or what was it? Yeah, Godzilla versus Kong.
Was 2021. The, was
2020. Yeah.
Came off of the heels of a disliked Godzilla movie called Godzilla King of the Monsters, starring that non-star Millie Bobby Brown, Streamo star, not movie star. Disliked movie that did fine, but did not live up to Kong Skull Island or the Godzilla that came out earlier in the decade, right? So that is also a reason why that movie didn't do as well as this one. The other thing that we're talking about here is with Dune is that we were in the thick in 2000 when the first Dune came out, we were still sort of in the thick of the superhero, people loving superheroes. We had not had the bombs that we had. We were coming off of, you know, 2019 Endgame, the apex of what that was. We were still in superheroes or the big budget movies that make Bafa Bobo. Timothy Chalamet was a guy who had been in some movies that Oscar voters liked and people like that liked, but he wasn't who he is now, who just came off of taking a something that we didn't think was still a viable IP with Wonka and making it a $200 million plus domestic win. And Dune was an unadaptable film, a novel that had been failed to be made into films. Lynch failed. They, you know, they made a whole documentary about a guy trying to make a Dune movie. And so that was something that we didn't know could be adapted or done well. So people went into Dune 1 thinking, okay, well, we'll see. I'm not sure about this. And then they realized after seeing it in the theater and then seeing it at home and then during the re-release that this is a movie with a director that we now respect and a star, a bona fide star in it. So that's why these movies did as well as they did. Just brass tacks is that, yeah, people are now more into Kong and Godzilla after Godzilla Minus One, the youth movement of young babies loving Godzilla and Kong. So that adds to it too. So the context of society is completely different than when those movies came out, not even mentioning COVID.
Right. Yes. Yes. Which we try to never mention, but
yeah.
So I think the end result or the end answer to WannaBO Zach's email is, hashtag our tribal chief more than ever. Mm-hmm. I mean, Scott Mendelson, this email does not dissuade us at all. He is our tribal chief. We acknowledge him, and his day and date theory about 2021 still seems very, very sound.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag BO bloodline.
Yeah. BO bloodline. So, email us, of course, the BO Boys Podcast at gmail.com. We love getting your emails, and we got love a bunch of them that we love you, Zach. Love you, man.
Love you, man.
We'll get to a bunch. We have a bunch of emails that we've still got start off that we're going to get to, and we'll probably get them on the weekend preview episode or the Kirk exclusive episode this week. But we will get to a bunch of emails. Send us more emails, the BO Boys Podcast at gmail.com. So, Christopher, before we go, first of all, anything else in the next few weeks that you're particularly excited about or has some buzz on the campuses? Are the college kids looking forward to the Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead remake that is coming out this Friday? Is there any awareness of that movie from iconic releasing?
No, just Deadpool Wolverine is definitely going to be as big as everyone thinks it will be. I really doubt that has any chance of failing. Well, I feel like I've seen some people that think like superhero movies are still on the wane and that this is going to be impacted by this. But I think this is the one movie that stands alone from everything else in Marvel.
What about end of the month challengers? Zendaya.
I think that's gonna open like Monkey Man and leg itself out to like 30 million or something, but I don't think it's gonna be anyone but you. Okay. But I don't think it's gonna be a total disaster.
Oh wow. Okay. So not feeling the breakout potential on the college campuses for this movie. Interesting.
But I do still think she is a big star. It's like her, basically that entire Dune cast, her, Austin Butler, all of my friends know who they are and definitely are interested in the movies they're going to do. So I think Bike Riders does have a chance later this year too, or whenever that's going to come out.
All right. And what else is cooking in your department? Obviously, you're managing Jack. He's writing the Substack. You are just running the social media. What could we look forward to in the coming couple of weeks, couple of months from you and your team in the BO Boys internship department?
Just more great content. Look forward to videos might be changing up. So we got a new studio. Might have to change up the format of the videos too to go along with that.
Yep.
And then I will be potentially making a cameo appearance at one of the live shows. TBD. But there's potential.
There is. Yeah. I mean, we've got to get on that. That's going to be a team effort. So I think it's time we maybe have a all hands on deck meeting soon with WannaBO junior intern Jack. How is Jack doing? Cause I mean, we have not really, which is a credit to you that we have not had to interact with Jack, which was always the original, the plan that especially Clayton would never have to see him. And I think since we gave him the job, we haven't had to do that. How is he doing? How are you guys working as a team? And are you both excited to possibly pitch in on the live tour?
Yeah, we've talked about it a little bit. We're definitely both excited to pitch in. And he's doing good too. We talked from time to time. And he's the main other guy I know that I can talk to movies with. So he's my WannaBO bro, honestly. So
I love it. So so we'll be working together soon because this tour is we got to blow it out. This is what the Eras tour was in 2023. I think the BO Boys live tour is going to be in 2024.
Oh, it's going to be even bigger.
Yeah, it's going to be even bigger. And
we're going to exploit our fan base to the point where they can't afford winter jackets because all you can do is rent. The movie, you can't purchase it in any capacity. You can either rent it or get chained to Disney Plus. Okay, cool.
Plus subscription.
Someone to look up to, little girls.
Yeah. Well, listen, you know what? Yes, I'll say right out, yes, we are going to do that. We will exploit our fans with this tour so that they cannot buy winter jackets. I will state that on the record here. If that opportunity presents itself, we will do that. And they'll love it. They'll love it.
It was no judgment. It was just facts. It's not judgment. Yeah. I'm on board. If you're on board, I'm on board. If that's what we're doing.
Everyone loves a scam here at the BO Boys. Everyone loves a good scam.
Yeah.
Everybody acts like I have an opinion. I don't have an opinion. I'm just stating facts. It's not an opinion. It's facts.
Yeah. We're saying it right now. The live tour is a scam and everyone's going to love it.
Yeah.
So of course, follow Christopher's work on our social media at the BO Boys Pod on TikTok and on Twitter X. Of course, follow Wannabe O Junior Intern Jack's work on the Substack. She's just writing up a storm. Follow us on YouTube. Subscribe to the BO Boys YouTube channel. Watch our Kirk exclusives on the Kirk Minahan YouTube channel. And we got another one coming up this week that's going to be just incredible. And over there on the Kirk exclusives, no holds barred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never know what we're going to say. There's no caution tape on those episodes. And of course, email us theboboyspodcast@gmail.com, 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And I think that's it, guys. I mean, is there anything else? I don't have anything else left to say.
No, there's no other platforms that we're available on, and there's no other thing left to be said.
No.
Except for, until next time,
Will Smith.